Welcome to Witness, a ministry of Covenant Presbyterian Church in Jackson, Mississippi. Join us in person for worship each Sunday at 9:30 and 11 a.m. For more information about Covenant, including discipleship and mission opportunities, visit us at www.covenantpresjackson.org.
It was springtime, the time of year when kings went to war, the time of year when kings went to battle, leading their armies. And where do we find the King of Israel? Where do we find God's anointed leader over his people? Where do we find King David? On the field of battle, leading his soldiers, defending God's people? No. David is at home, in Jerusalem, in the palace, in comfort. He had sent his army out. He had sent his soldiers out to battle with his general Joab leading them. God's people were at war with the Ammonites. For many years, the Ammonites had infringed upon their land, taken their land. Now the Israelite army had driven them back, and they were besieging the Ammonite city of Ramah. It was the springtime when kings led their people to battle. And that's where David should have been. That's where David was supposed to be. It was the duty of the king to lead the army into battle. It was the duty of the king to defend his land and his people. David should have been serving his people. David should have been putting his life on the line for his people. He should have been living sacrificially. He should have been living the calling that God had given him, the work that God had set before him. But instead, David was at home. David was at leisure. Listen to verse 2 again from our passage. It happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch. In the late afternoon, David got up off his couch, which means this: he'd been sleeping all day, or at least lounging most of the day. His men are at war. His men are serving Israel, putting their life on the line, dying, and David is sleeping all day, laying around on his couch. Well, here's the first point from our passage. Sexual temptation is greater when our focus is inward. Sexual temptation is greater when our focus is inward, and here's what I mean. When we are living out God's calling on our lives, when we are living lives of love, when we are living sacrificially for others, when our focus is on our neighbor, when the focus is outside of ourselves, sexual temptation is not as great. But when we are turned inward, self-focused, self-seeking, living for ourselves, our wants, our desires, our pleasures, our needs, then sexual temptation is so much greater. When you are loving and serving the Lord, when you are loving and serving your spouse, your family, your friends, and those around you, you're living focused outward, outside of yourself. When you honor the calling that God has in your life, the work that he has given you, and you're faithful in it, diligent in it, you're living focused outward. And when you do, sexual temptation, sexual desire can be checked by love. Now, this is important for all of us, but especially if you struggle with the sins of the seventh commandment. Now, in this moment, in this season of his life, if David had served the Lord by living out his calling as king, lived sacrificially for his people, battled for his people, led his armies into war, he would not have committed adultery because the opportunity would not have been there. But David was home, sleeping all day, and temptation reared its ugly head. Our passage tells us that David got up off his couch late in the afternoon and he takes a walk on his roof. And he was probably on the roof because it was cooler there than in the palace. So the king was walking on his roof late in the afternoon, and this is what he saw. Listen to the last part of verse 2. He saw from the roof a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful. David saw a woman bathing. She was beautiful. God created the human body. God created beauty. We can recognize the beauty that God has created, gifted to one created in his image. And we can stop there. If David had simply caught a glimpse of beauty and then continued his walk on the roof, he would not have sinned. But that is not what David did. David did not stop with a glimpse. His glimpse turned into a gaze. And he began to imagine the possibilities. And that's lust. Lust is imagining the possibilities. And lust is adultery of the heart. It's breaking the seventh commandment in your thoughts. So be aware of your gaze. In other words, be aware of what you look at. Be conscious of how you're looking. If you become aware that you are entering the state of a lustful gaze where you are imagining the possibilities, then avert your eyes. Look away. Stop. Now, this is true for anyone, but particularly men who tend to be more prone to such temptation. And it's especially true for the day in which we live. In our visual oversex culture, there are sexual images almost everywhere we look. And pornography has never been as easily accessible. One Google search can lead you to access to millions of porn sites. Well, thanks in part to the mobile phone, pornography has become normalized in American society. Even feminists who once denounced porn as degrading to women, objectifying to women, or objectifying women, now simply comment that if it does not work for you as a woman, then don't view it. Pornography leads to sin. Its purpose is to make you think of the possibilities and thus break the seventh commandment in your mind, in your heart. It creates a false understanding of the gift of sex that God has given, that it should be instant gratification on demand, that it can be detached from a bodily encounter. And it also trivializes sex by making it third-person entertainment. And it's addictive. Again, if you are living a selfless life, if you're living a life of love focused outside of yourself, loving God and loving your neighbor, pornography may not be as much of a temptation. But lust can be a poison. Lust can be deadly. And David shows us just how. His glance at the woman bathing turned into a stare. The stare turned into imagining the possibilities, which is lust. And there, David should have fled. He should have turned, kept on walking. And that's exactly what we should do. We should flee from sexual temptation, turn, walk away, run. In our New Testament reading for 1 Corinthians, Paul writes, flee from sexual immorality. But David didn't. His lust became a poison which grew within him. His lust became a power over him, a power that he could not resist. Imagining the possibilities was not enough. He had to have that beautiful woman. And he begins by finding out who she was. So David asks his servants, and here is their answer in verse 3. Is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? Now, her name was Bathsheba, and she was married to one of David's most loyal soldiers, married to one of David's mighty men. And so the matter should have ended right there, but it didn't. lust had taken control of David. He wanted Bathsheba. He was, after all, the king, and he would have her. Listen to verse 4 again. So David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her. A glimpse led to a gaze. The gaze led to imagining the possibilities, and the possibilities became reality. A sin of the heart became a sin indeed, thought to action. David committed adultery. David broke the seventh commandment. And as a result, Bathsheba became pregnant. In a matter of weeks, David's sin would become very visible. And he knew it. So what does David do? He attempts a cover-up. And here's how he does it. First, David sends for Bathsheba's husband. David sends for Uriah. Now, Uriah was probably a bit puzzled to leave the battlefield, to leave his comrades in arms, and to return to Jerusalem. Maybe the king had an important assignment for him. Maybe the king had another pressing duty for him. But when Uriah came to the king, David simply inquired about the general, asked him how Joab was doing, and he asked him how the war was going. And then he sent him home. David's plan was to have Uriah spend time at home, spend time with his wife, so that Uriah would think the child was his. But Uriah was an upright man. Uriah was a sacrificial man. Knowing that his comrades were still at battle, knowing they were still camping out on the fields, he could not in good conscience go home to his wife. Quite the contrast with the king, is it not? So instead of going home, Uriah slept in the king's doorway with the king's servants. But David didn't give up. David turned to plan B. David invited Uriah to a meal. He got Uriah drunk. Surely that would do the trick. But still, Uriah did not go home. He slept on a couch, again, with the king's servants. So David had to come up with a plan C. This time he sends Uriah back to the battlefield, and he sends Uriah with a message to his general. David ordered Joab to send Uriah to the front lines, to the fiercest fighting. Now listen to verse 17. And the men of the city came out and fought with Joab, and some of the servants of David among the people fell. Uriah the Hittite also died. And David took Bathsheba to be his wife. It started with a look, a glance. And by the time David was finished, he had not only committed adultery, but he was also guilty of lying, guilty of stealing, guilty of murder. And he may have gotten away with it. But listen to verse 27 of our passage. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. The Lord knew what David had done. The Lord knew what David saw. He knew David's thoughts, David's desires. He knew David's actions. He knew David's sin. And he was displeased with his king. You see, the Father knows us. The Father knows you. He knows what you look at. He knows what you think. He knows your desires. He knows your actions. And you are accountable to him. David was accountable to him. Now, following this whole affair, the son that was born to Bathsheba, David's son, died. Then David's family was torn by incest and rape and murder, and David's kingdom was divided. His oldest son attempted to take the throne. These were the consequences. These were the results of sin. All for a few moments' pleasure. Now, in the midst of this whole tragic episode, David did do one thing right. David confessed. He openly confessed his sin. He repented. And Psalm 51 is the prayer that he prayed. Psalm 51 is the confession he made. Listen to the first four verses of Psalm 51. Have mercy on me, O God. According to your steadfast love, according to your abundant mercy, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions and my sin is ever before me. Against you and you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you may be justified in your words and blameless in your judgment. Well, God heard David's prayer. God heard David's confession. God heard David's cry for mercy, and he forgave him. God forgave David's sin. God forgave the sins of his king. And David remained on the throne. And not only did he remain on the throne, David was given a promise. And the promise was this, that one of his descendants would always be on the throne. That a son of David would always be king of God's people. This is a promise that pointed to Jesus. This is a promise that is fulfilled in Jesus. Jesus was a son of David, born in the hometown of David. And Jesus is king. He's a king who loved, a king who served, a king who sacrificed. Jesus is a king who did not spend his time in leisure. Jesus went to battle, and he went to battle for you. He didn't battle an earthly army. He didn't battle the Amorites. He battled sin, and he battled death, and he battled the evil one. And he was victorious over them, victorious upon the cross. He was victorious for you upon the cross. And he can forgive you. He can forgive your struggles with lust. He can forgive your struggles with pornography. He can forgive your sexual sins. He can forgive you of adultery and any other sin. Turn to Jesus and confess. Turn to him and pray David's prayer. Turn to him and receive forgiveness. Don't be chained by guilt. Run to Jesus. And when you do, when you receive that forgiveness, when you are freed from the chains that bind you, when you rest in him, know that it won't be like waving a magic wand. Everything won't be made perfect. Like David, the consequences of your actions will still be there. And they may be difficult to bear. But know this, your Savior will be with you. The one who died on the cross for you and rose again will be with you through the mess that you've made. He'll be faithful through the mess that you've made. And he'll be with you through the pain. And in turn, his desire is for you to be faithful. Faithful to him, faithful to his commands, faithful to the seventh commandment. Faithful to love.
Thank you for tuning in to Witness, a ministry of Covenant Presbyterian Church in Jackson, Mississippi.